There once was a man named Gold Roger, who was king of the pirates. He had fame, power, and wealth beyond your wildest dreams. Before they hung him from the gallows, these were the final words he said.
Our perspective is yours for the taking, but you'll have to join us first. We left everything we debated at the Yonko table.
Ever since, pirates from all over the world set sail for the Grand Line, searching for the Yonko table, the table that will make their dreams come true.
Yo!
Yo, folks, welcome to the latest and the greatest from the Yonko table. That is the voice of Grandmaster Hoop coming at you from Palmyra City in the great DCEU, DCU universe. Because look up in the sky, there's a new hero in town. It's the Blue Beetle. That's right, folks. We're here to talk about the 14th entry in the DCEU and this weird bin between film. A Blue Beetle that fits right smack dab in the middle of the transitioning out of the DCEU to James Gunn's DCU. It's Blue Beetle, and we're here to talk about it. With me, as always, is Dr. Chase Attorney. Dr. Chase Attorney, Blue Beetle, are you happy for Blue Beetle? He's here. Jaime Reyes.
Why do you sound so unenthused?
I'm super enthused.
It's almost as if you didn't like the movie.
iMovie.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what verb to put in there just yet.
Of course. Wow. Sure. I'm here for Jaime Reyes.
Awesome.
As you said, the kickstart to James Gunn's Gunverse. I think it's a fun film. We'll get into the nitty gritty, but damn it, man, pick it up. I know you love this movie. You came out of that theater and you were like, man, I'm a Blue Beetle stan now, because you did not know enough about Blue Beetle before going in.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You were saying, who's Cord? Who's Cord? Who's Conrad?
Cord? Cord with a D?
Yes, Cord with a D.
Oh, okay. And Conrad, there's no Conrad.
Ah, see, look at that. Now you know.
Sure. All right, cool. We are not alone in this venture of taking off with Blue Beetle. We have some supernovas in the house to discuss this film. Let's hear who's joining the discussion today on Blue Beetle.
Who's that dork? It's Darce.
Viene, viene, paging Dr. Mondo.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rika from the Yonko Table, and you're not watching Disney Channel.
All right, cool. We're here. We're here to talk about Blue Beetle. Let me just set it up real quick. It's Blue Beetle. He's a superhero. Jaime Reyes. The film was directed by Angel Manuel Soto, written by Gareth Dunnett, Al Coser, and starring Sholo, Maridueña, Adriana Barraza, Damian Alcazar,
wow,
Elpidia Carrillo, Bruna Marquezine, Raul Max Trujillo, Susan Sarandon, and of course, everybody's favorite, George Lopez. Oh, my friend is a low rider. Yes, that is our cast of this film. Goodness, look, that's what's going on. Blue Beetle, it's another typical superhero film origin story. Let's go across the room. What were y'all's initial reactions to Blue Beetle? How y'all feeling walking out of Blue Beetle? Are you turning your fist into giant little hammers and swords? Or are you trying to take that scarab off your back?
I really liked it. I really enjoyed the movie. Very touching, emotional, and funny. And also, I don't know, like the action sequences are pretty good. So I'll talk more about all of that, but I liked it a lot.
I enjoyed the movie. It was fun. I liked it. I think it's a breath of fresh air coming out of movies that we went to see in theaters like Shazam, Fury of the Gods, The Flash, I just remember being
Quantumania, sure.
A Quantumania, likewise. There's really only been one live action superhero movie this year that we've walked out of, and I feel like it's pretty universal that we've actually enjoyed, which was Guardians 3. I at least for this one, it was the second movie this year where I'm like, you know what? It may not have been perfect, but that was a damn fun movie. That family element, it almost got me a couple times. I think there was two moments where I was almost there. I was almost there. I was on the verge, but I didn't. Not this time. Maybe for a squeakquel.
Those two moments that you're talking about got me hard. Like,
no!
Sobbing. Yeah, oh no. In public too. Awful.
We were in the background.
Yeah.
I was like, don't look at me.
Oh, everybody was touched by this movie.
Yeah.
Everyone here has been touched by the right? Correct? Yes.
I'm gonna let Darce finish his point. Go ahead.
No, I mean, yeah, like that. It was a great movie. I didn't know too much about the Blue Beetle, but to be honest with you, seeing a Hispanic superhero come onto the screen, I was very excited to see it, and it did not let me down. So, all in all, I had a great time watching it.
Yeah, I would echo both of us saw it together, and we're also here together on the podcast episode. Yeah, it was. I echo AJ's thoughts earlier. Just like, it was really fun. And you know what? It's unbearably hot outside. So anything that you do here in Texas has to be inside. So I would like those activities that I do inside to be fun. So I'm glad that the movie was a good time. So yeah, it was fun.
I agree with y'all. It was fun.
Oh.
It's a fun movie.
Really? Now you want to
agree? Now you're jumping on the train.
Let me tell you, that was a different attitude.
No.
Walking out.
I was just like saying, since there wasn't any M involved, like no
MCU.
There
was MCU. No Spider-Man. Yeah, there was no Spider-Man. Captain America.
Because it has to have an M. It has to be Marvel related for me to enjoy it. Absolutely. You're right. Let's close up shop right now. You know how I feel.
It's a wrap.
It's over. Yeah, we're done here.
I remember walking out.
Thanks for listening, everybody. That's our Blue Beetle pod.
I remember walking out. You were like, man, I wish they tied in Robin from Teen Titans.
You need to stop. Listen, it's an enjoyable film. I could watch this movie again. That's good. That's a good thing. I could watch it again. It is with flaw. There are flaws. But there is a charm to it, for sure. The action is, I think probably the action in the suit, I really enjoyed that. And I enjoyed the lore that they explored. And the family element is definitely quintessential. And it is done better than other films that try to do this familial tie-in element or through line.
Fast and Furious?
Fast and Furious has done better in the past.
Better.
Maybe not in their most recent entries.
Interesting.
But again, right. Apples to oranges. Why are you bringing up Fast and Furious?
They both have family.
I got some comparisons.
Central core.
I got some comparisons to make. Trust me, I do. But
your comparisons yelling out a name of a god in order for him to get superpowers?
Oh. That's one of them, but I guess I'm more interested in y'all's opinions than if anything. But yes, that one will come up. I'm sure that one will come up, definitely. But before we get into the nitty gritty of the film, you know, this is a milestone film. There's some things we should celebrate about this film. Correct me if I'm wrong. First live action superhero movie to star a Latino hero. In the starring role, right?
Yep.
Like
starring like Latino Hispanic superhero, I think so. Because I think like the closest we got to maybe like a Hispanic superhero on the screen, although he was actually the villain, was in Black Panther 2.
Yeah, I would not call him a hero.
No, exactly.
A misunderstood hero?
No, misunderstood.
No, he didn't save anybody.
Villain,
no.
Whatever. But like,
he was protecting his people.
But the main character, like the main protagonist of a movie, then yeah, like Blue Beetle, like this was the first live action Hispanic superhero.
That's something to celebrate.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Likewise, we have many. Oh, Dr. Ricker, I think you your mouth is moving, but I didn't hear any. Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Well, yeah, that's a great thing, especially you know, for the Mexican community. I think that was something to highlight as well. They definitely got their shine here, for sure. I heard some mixed things as far as some things, but those are not my opinions, and I dare not speak for anybody else. So, but I heard, you know, good thing as far as the representation part goes, as far as the culture aspects. So that's another thing to celebrate too. And you know, you can also thank that to kind of the staff behind the scenes as well. The director, Angel Manuel Soto, a Puerto Rican.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yo, do your research, son. yes. I think
parts of the film were filmed in Puerto Rico.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
Like all, like the castle scene, that's all, that's Puerto Rico there.
Oh my God, that felt like Puerto Rico.
They were at Del Moro.
Oh my gosh,
it looked exactly like. I'm like, wow, this looks really familiar. Why do I feel like I've been to these? I didn't even recognize it.
No, what yeah, do I you was, know like, about? Movie, oh,
I've
yeah,
been there. Thank you very much. And Dr. Mondo was there when I was there. Thank you very much. So,
fine, we have a witness. Fine.
Yeah, we have a Puerto Rican
this
witness.
This time.
I'm in the clear. I have a Puerto Rican friend. Okay.
My gosh.
The check mark.
The token.
I have Mexican friends too.
Oh. It sounds that sounds familiar.
And I have Mexican American friends.
We're gonna need you to start listing out all of your friends and their ethnicities so that we can validate anything that you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fine.
Correct.
That's fine. I have a black Puerto Rican friends as well.
These are very problematic phrases, but
I'm just saying
it parrots a certain segment of another community. But
oh, okay. Either way,
ex friends.
Listen, I'm just saying. Real recognizes real. Okay, that's all I'm saying. You got almost an entirely Latin cast, Hispanic cast. Also, I think is a plus. In prominent roles, too. They're not just like one-off characters, one scene type. They're here.
Oh, my God. That was my biggest fear with the movie. Like with the family that you're referencing. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just going to be like, oh, yeah, they get like one scene. Or they establish them early on and then that's it. Like, you may see them say one or two words later on. No, they're prominent throughout the film. And that I really appreciated. I think the early parts kind of suffered a little bit, like, from just, like, pacing-wise. Like, parts early on felt a little slow. I'm like, oh, man, where's the Beetle? Where's the Blue Beetle? But I think that was necessary early on to do that so that I could feel that connection when the big moments hit later on.
Yeah, and I think that the family element in this was done very well. I think that when they were starting to concept the movie and to like start working in the writer's room on the script, one of the main things must have been like Hispanics, family, like it goes hand in hand. And so I think that they did a really good job of tying in a family element into this without it being like overly cheesy of a family element. It teetered that line just a little bit, but like it was still done very well. And there's a lot of points that I want to make about the family, but I'll make sure that everybody has.
We're going to get there for sure.
Also, speaking of location, where was this taken?
Almera City. I'd never heard of it in as far as the greater DC goes.
They were on a key, right? It was Gold Key, Estate Key.
They lived on the Keys, which I guess there are some smaller islands off from the bigger city.
And that was 100% Miami that they were filming in.
Honestly, it was like a mix between like Miami and a futuristic Puerto Rico, like pretty much. Like the everything, there were some parts that I was like, this literally looks like me driving down the streets near my house.
Well, they filmed it, yeah, predominantly the yeah, film like, filmed in San Juan, old San Juan. But then like
Georgia, Georgia, I think,
yeah, Georgia
and El Paso, Texas. That's where they kind of filmed everything.
They got a good little mix, but I was getting, yeah, definitely Puerto Rico and Miami type vibes for good, sure.
And I think that's what they want to go for, is not have one defined city, but like have it be a conglomerate of a bunch of different, kind of like with Batman.
Yeah, Gotham is supposed to be what, Gotham, like Chicago-esque.
Chicago-esque plus a little bit of New York and...
I'm fine with that.
Yep. Yeah.
So they did a great job as far as getting this representation. We're good with that, right? It was good. They did a great job. They did a good job.
I really like the family element of the movie. They did a really good job. It was sufficiently cheesy, but not too cheesy for me to just be like, ugh. It was like, and it really... I think it was very evident that the ones in charge of the movie were also Hispanic, because like you saw it in the way they interacted, even the jokes they were doing.
Oh, the jokes. Yeah.
Even the jokes, everything. It was like, oh, this is like, they know, like, and that interaction, that big family that like, oh, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I was laughing the entire time. And like when the moments hit, I was like, I'm feeling it.
Those moments, Dr. Mondo, you're talking about, I would turn to Grandmaster. I would say, you don't know about this.
Oh my gosh. How?
Because he would laugh like, what are you laughing at? Listen, you don't know what this
He'd be like, you don't know what Cup Throne is.
What killed me is how they implemented El Chapulín Colorado into the movie.
Oh my god!
Like, that was just like, okay, this is actually brilliant. What you just
this was
did
perfect.
Here,
it was
the most
perfect.
Popular superhero in Latin America, El Chapulín.
Oh man, I loved it,
and I really liked the fact that they even like that. The family dynamic of you have your matriarch in the house of that's like so prevalent in a lot of
that is huge in Latin American culture.
Yes. And like even the dynamic of like brother and sister, like the parent dynamic, like it was all very, it was done very well. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
props to the sister who plays the sister. She was fantastic, I thought. At least as the first core family member you really get introduced to out of all of them.
Ballista Escobedo.
Ballista. I mean, she was great. She was
really good.
She was one of the better elements.
She was Hocus Pocus too.
That's your jam, Grandmaster. You saw Hocus Pocus too.
I have not watched Hocus Pocus.
You have not watched it?
I have not.
I could have sworn you had a watch party.
Sure didn't. Wrong. Oh. Wrong Grandmaster who.
Oh, wow.
Must have been your other friend. Because we all look alike.
Oh, my. We're going to realize.
Did y'all notice that? All right, last little thing. You notice that one TV show with that guy in the mask and he comes and he takes that game show?
Don Francisco?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That one.
When she was flipping through the channels?
Yes.
Yes. Right. Oh, did you recognize?
I knew that one. I'm Captain America in this movie. I was like, I know that reference.
Of course. Also, your MCU quota has been hit.
I was laughing at the fact that even with the power outage of her sewing, she's like, and then just turns on the battery light and still keeps. Because it's like, oh, okay, power's out. What else is
that
new?
Doesn't stop as my
as a Puerto Rican, I can attest to that. Like Puerto Rico, their power outage is pretty much almost like every day or twice, three times a week
minimum.
We're ready.
No, I think it's just, you know, it's worth highlighting that, you know,
they did their research, they did their homework, they have representation.
Right. It wasn't a checklist. There was an authenticity to it, which I think is very important when these films come along, these films that, you know, appeal to a broader, diverse audience. They got to nail that. If they don't nail that, like, that's like the foundation of your film. The superhero stuff comes after that, you know? It's like, what separates this film from any regular or run-of-the-mill superhero film? And I think that's an element definitely that the film, you know, achieves and as y'all just attested to. But now we got ourselves an actual film outside of, you know, this foundation building. Y'all good to get into the nitty-gritty?
Yeah, let's bring it.
Okay. All right, let's, you know, just kick things off with Jaime. Poor kid from the streets of Palmera City, but he's a first-gen college student, wants to help his family and give back to the community. Xolo Maridueña. Do y'all know Xolo? Y'all know him?
Yeah, Cobra Kai, yeah.
Shut up,
yeah.
You don't watch Cobra Kai.
What? I don't watch Cobra Kai.
None of y'all watch Cobra Kai.
You don't watch Cobra Kai.
I do watch Cobra Kai.
You do not. I have to tell you who this was.
No, you didn't.
Yes.
No, I love Cobra Kai. And I think he did great as Jaime. I don't know. Yeah, he's got a certain charisma to him. He's not over the top. He's very humble, I think, in his acting. And I think that comes through in Jaime, just, you know. But goodness, I don't know. He just graduated from Gotham University. Did the man even apply for any jobs? I don't know.
I mean, as soon as he got home, he was kind of hit with like a big old bombshell, you know, like.
Yeah.
So while you were away, we wanted to keep some things from you. And here are the list of things. And I think that's actually very accurate to like Hispanic culture, is that like parents are going to try to protect you as much as they can, especially if it's from the truth sometimes. So,
and they will break their backs to do whatever so you can be successful, so you can find like happiness and all that.
They won't
burden you.
Graduate, right? He was the first one in the family to graduate from college.
Yeah, they mentioned that, and there was a piece of dialogue too. I think the initial plan before he found out all this was to go to grad school because he was pre-law, and so.
Oh right, yeah, I did catch that. Yeah,
and she was like, "So what about grad school?" And he's like, "Well, you know, we're losing the house, potentially the garage. Dad had a heart attack, so like, I think the plan wasn't necessarily to get a job; it was to go to grad school so that he could get a job."
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that element, I really liked it because that's something that happens a lot in Hispanic households, that, you know, family break their back so that one of them can, you know, go to college, have a great education and so forth. And you don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but they're working their asses off. And it was very wholesome, that relationship that they had. It's like, oh yeah, like everything's going to be fine. And like, even the entire, yeah, we're going to lose the house, we're going to lose everything, but look what you accomplished. And that's like what's important for us. That's very Hispanic right there.
Yeah. Oh. And it kind of ties also in, because I was getting a similar emotional resonance was within The Heights, when she like came back from college and she's like, I'm gonna school down because like I'm the one who's supposed to go out and like get that education and then come back, you know.
Yeah, it's almost, even like in the movie, we see like Jaime have a little bit of that like guilt, and it's saying like, damn, so it's like kind of because of me, like you guys are losing everything, and it's like I have to give something back. And yeah, I really liked how they did it, and Xolo Maridueña did a great job at that, like very humble, really portrayed Jaime perfectly, in my opinion, as this like this Hispanic kid who's like trying to find himself still. So
let me ask you too, is anybody familiar with Blue Beetle outside of this movie?
Not that much. If anything, I've seen it like in, I think, like Young Justice and all that kind of stuff, but that I don't know that much about Blue Beetle.
We were having that conversation. I was like, Darce, I swear I've seen like an animated version of him before.
Yep.
And he's like, was it Young Justice? So I'm glad that you all confirmed.
Yeah,
that.
It's Young Justice. I think it's like the Justice. Second season of Young Justice. Like he pops season. Up.
Well, he's through. Yeah, he appears in the second season. Then he's, well, the second season belongs to him. It's actually all about the Scarab and the Reach, mm-hmm. which is the alien race and whatnot. He's got some other appearances across the DC medium.
I think he also appears in like a Batman one.
Batman Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, he appears in one episode.
Oh, wow.
No, he appears throughout that whole series.
Oh, then that, like, I didn't watch Brave and the Bold that much. I just like know that he appeared.
I didn't either, but that was probably the first time I ever seen Blue Beetle was, yeah, Batman Brave and the Bold. And then I learned about him more through Young Justice. So, but I think this is definitely the first time they really highlighted his Mexican heritage and really play to that as far as, you know, outlining his story, where his story could go, you know, realistic tie-ins and whatnot. So I do think, yeah, they did a good job with that for sure. And I think he's really good.
Speaking of realistic tie-ins, George Lopez.
Oh my God.
Would like every family has that one family member that lives with them, that like is staying with them, that is also crazy kooky like type of person. Mm-hmm. And I loved that element, like
the crazy uncle
in there. I feel like I'm gonna be the crazy uncle when I grow up, but I just loved like his comic relief throughout the movie. Like, yeah. I thought it was great.
No, like George Lopez was hilarious. Like every time George Lopez was on scene, I was just cracking up.
You know, I'll tell you, some people were weary about George Lopez. They said, oh, the first Mexican superhero, George Lopez is here.
He's a prominent Mexican actor.
He was fine. I had no problems with George Lopez.
Throw him in there.
I don't think he overstayed his welcome. And I actually thought it was pretty funny for, you know, him not being funny for a good couple of years. So I thought this was George Lopez in true form. And I don't think he outshined anybody either.
No, and his character is very touching because, you know, like, he's that crazy uncle. You know, he's like, you know, big brother's watching. Like, they destroy his car, everything. Like, goes to shit. But he's, like, the one that supports Jaime, like, throughout the entire movie.
Right.
It's so touching. Like, he gives them, like, the best at pretty much, like, one of the best advice like throughout the movie, and just like he's there throughout the entire time, and it's like very touching. Plus the comedic relief is great.
Yeah, I think they had a good balance, is really of using a lot of the family members and allowing them to have a moment with Jaime, to kind of let us into. We saw a lot more, I would say, with like the sister and the uncle, and then a little bit of course with dad. But yeah, I think they, to AJ's point, like a little earlier, of like my worry too was like, oh, we'll get introduced to the family and then they become not as relevant, when I really want them to be part of the story. And they really did a good job of like weaving them in and out, not only setting up the story, but allowing them to be a part of him becoming not only himself, but a superhero too. So I thought it was a really good balance.
You definitely have to have that balance, because how the movie progresses, it gets to a point where it's like, oh, Jaime, go, you know, blow some shit up, because they're coming for your family. We were invested in the family, most definitely. The film did a good job at making you invest in the family. Yeah, dad and the mom probably got the least amount of screen time, I think. But then dad had some really prominent moments that, you know, set up Jaime's character for sure, as far as, you know, how the movie goes, we'll get there. And same thing with the mom as well. I think they nailed the family. Compared to Shazam, I don't know if you want to talk about Shazam right now. The first Shazam did a really good job with the family aspect. The second one obviously got lost in the sauce, I think. And they missed the point of what made the first Shazam and that familial aspect work. And this film was like, we're going to take that and we're going to throw some sazon on it. And then boom, we're going to have a better take. Should I be saying
some adobo? Some adobo on that. But
sure.
Dr. Mondo just said adobo. I'm okay.
He can say adobo. He can say
it. I use sazon.
I'll let you Sazon. That's
Sazon is great also.
Thank you. Thank you. But who are they up against? What's going on? Well, it's capitalism. Capitalism is bad. Greed is money. Good, says Gordon Gekko. We got to have money.
Money.
Enter Cord.
Cord.
The big corporation, Cord. Cord owns everything. If it comes out of a machine, it's Cord.
Kind of like the Skynet meets Oscorp meets.
I don't even know what Cord is. They just own everything.
Which is, it's so weird though, because how many billionaires are in this universe with Batman being Wayne Tech plus?
Oh my God! Yeah,
Queen
LexCorp,
Queen Enterprises.
LexCorp.
Which apparently Dr. J says there was a LexCorp building.
There was a LexCorp building.
I didn't see it.
During one of the shots when they were showing the city.
I didn't see it.
There are many industries that are making many different types of technologies, apparently.
Sure.
So, making a shit ton of money.
Well, and again, the big push is we need super soldiers. We need military grade high tech gear.
But why? Why? Where's the why?
I don't know, because there's a global
threat. We didn't get a why.
Well, I mean, let's look into our real lives. Why do we have so much money spent on military tech?
Security. Security is
security.
Not, I guess.
Private military.
Fantasy. And I think also on top of Cord being one of the main bad entities of the movie, it seems like the white female was also the bad entity in some of the movies.
Oh no, that was intentional.
Every interaction that he had with one of these ladies was like the rudest thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
My name's really Jaime Reyes. Okay, Jamie.
Yeah.
Sanchez. Come on, Sanchez.
My name is not Sanchez.
How many times like have I been here and they've gotten my last name wrong or they butcher my name? Antonio Gonzalez. Rodriguez is not a middle name. Become culturally competent, you.
Hey, that's really long though. That's a lot of syllables, Dr. Mondo.
Are you defending them?
Give people a break.
This sounds from personal experience.
Let me stop. I'm kidding. Look, people call me Cooper all the time. Grandmaster Coop. I'm like, are you illiterate fox? Or they'd be like, Grandmaster Hopper. I'm like, come on, y'all. There's two O's.
Jim Hopper.
A part of the dialogue from the sister near the beginning is, you know, we're invisible to them, which, and so we saw like little hints throughout. I know we focus so much on like the family element and even like themes or concepts that are really common as far as like hard work and first gen going to college and what it's like to kind of interact with family. But there were those pieces too of just like the microaggressions and how people treat you and how they don't really invest in caring about you as a person unless they're benefiting from something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We saw that with Jaime. We saw that with some of the other scientists and whatnot, and even the antagonist, that there wasn't a lot of thoughtfulness in how Susan Sarandon's character had interacted with them. So
listen,
Susan Sarandon.
Let's just call out the elephant in the room. Susan Sarandon was terrible.
Baby and kept moving.
I felt like she walked onto the wrong set at one point. She, to me, she gave off Hillary vibes. Hillary Clinton, like she had the hair and the outfit. And I thought, was there a biopic set that you were supposed to walk in on? Because this is not it. And I wasn't feeling it. There were some the end scene where she's being dragged to her death. She's like, Ignacio, no, stop that. Let me go. And I'm like, could you do better? You don't sound like you're being dragged to your death right now.
My favorite was with her and Jenny Cord. Stay out of my way.
Yeah, like she was like the weakest, like in my opinion, like the weakest link of the movie.
Yeah,
she was.
Yeah, but I still gave a lot of grace to that villain. I think it was like, okay, I guess I see what you're trying to portray.
I don't see it.
I don't see it, right?
Yeah, like I don't like the trope, at least when it comes to certain villains, where it's like, of course, they're the evil billionaire corporate CEO. And I mean, you can do that, but I feel like you got to do a little bit more than just, because her whole thing was like, yes, we must get the scarab. Why? So that we can make powerful weapons. Why? So we can make money. Why? I don't know. It's just, I've seen it so many times, and superhero media as well. Like I think we've gotten it before in like some movies and even some video games.
I've already seen the glider.
Oh wow, that was Raimi, right?
And I mean, there was also that little element of sexism, and we talked about this.
We were having a conversation earlier. Like something that I was thinking about as I was watching the movie is like, what do I want out of a villain in like a comic book movie? And I think something that we as a group have talked about in other movies, whether it be DC, Marvel, is the villain problem, put quotations around that, of like, there have been a lot of really weak antagonists. And I was trying to like reflect as I was watching this, because I didn't like her performance and I didn't think it, you know, was very intriguing, despite the fact that there were other pieces I really liked. Like I really liked Jaime and I liked the Blue Beetle kind of interaction and the scarab and him trying to figure out the powers. I liked the family. And I was like, man, I wish he just had a stronger kind of foil, because this just doesn't, we've seen it before. And even if we have seen it before, can it at least be done well? And I just don't think it was. And so I was trying to, I don't have like a clear cut answer, but I was like, what do I actually like to see in villains? And what does entertain me? And this wasn't holistically entertaining. It wasn't great.
As a villain.
Yeah.
And then by extension, there's Ignacio.
Ignacio.
Omac. Carapax. Omac. Carapax. Whatever you want to call him. Carapax is his last name. OMAC
That's the acronym.
That's the military equipment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But he's based on a comic book villain, I guess, a cyborg. I guess his was better, but majority of the film, he was a drone.
And that's something we were also talking about, is like how disappointing, like his backstory is really interesting. And we only got
30 seconds.
Montage. 30 seconds. So I'm like, y'all were on this the entire movie.
If anything, what would have been interesting is that Ignacio would have been the main villain, and it's like kind of that fight, you know, because he says it's like the love for your family makes you weak. Like that should have been like the theme. Like that should have been the theme between the two, like the villains. And he should have, like, with that backstory saying, like, oh, yeah, like, I lost everything. And it's like, so, like, I've always been on my own. Like, my family's never been there, blah, 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 blah. And that should have been the foil to Jaime's very supportive family in that sense. Kind of like an anti-Jaime.
Using that as, like, a driving factor, right?
Yeah,
like,
that should have been the driving factor.
That's what made me strong.
Ignacio's character, that like the 30 second origin story, I was like, damn, I really wish they fleshed this out more.
Right. I was more disappointed once I saw it, because I'm like, wow, you're a better villain the whole movie and you're just throwing it now.
In a small part of me thinks that was like a last minute add on. They were like, we just filmed this entire
make
movie.
Make him interesting.
You to like add some context to this. But I think adding the different layers also, because we do love layers, of the higher corporation, you know, the military having Cord kind of be like Stark Industries, where he wakes up and he just sees the logo on the missile.
Oh wow.
Tropey.
Yeah. I think that it was really interesting to see that element of it. I do kind of wish there were little moments of him trying to remember, because it was also a little unclear as to like if he had the memory or not.
Right. Like he forgot or something.
Apparently he had forgot. Like he literally forgot.
Wild.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I kind of don't know how I would feel if it was in the sense of like you need to lose your family in order to get stronger, and that's like the message that he was trying to convey. I think him saying like you putting a lot of weight on your family is a sign of weakness, because you know you need to look after yourself. I don't know, it was interesting, and like we were talking about, I would have rather had more of that element.
And yeah. he should have been the main antagonist, and obviously they should have fleshed out his story more.
Well, I'm just gonna say, I don't think if you're gonna go for the carbon copy of the hero trope, which is what this was Obadiah Stane, this was Killmonger, you know, this was the Yellow Jacket, throw it away, throw it in the trash, start again, do something different. Like, I'm not a fan of it, despite whatever you want to do with the backstory. I don't like it. I don't like it. It's like, I can't. Oh, he's a copy. Oh, cool. No, we've been there. And they didn't do it good, like we've been saying, whether it was the backstory, but he's still just a carbon copy of the Blue Beetle. He was literally trying to copy the Blue Beetle. That was his plan. They wanted to copy the tech.
I think that
dumb.
Something good that they did on this one, though, in comparison to a lot of other superhero movies, is making sure that in those CGI fight scenes, the villain looked very different from the hero.
Sure. Colors helped with that as well.
It was the colors, but like it was also like we're not having Killmonger versus Black Panther, and they're both wearing literally the exact same suit. You know,
type black suits with minimum accents of other colors,
right? And then like also like in Venom, like the symbiotes that were fighting against.
Oh god, that was a mess.
I think a lot of it was practical.
In Venom, you think all that? Oh, was practical?
No, in this film, like a lot of Jaime in the. I mean, we're about to get to the suit. A lot of the Blue Beetle scenes in his suit were practical. A lot of those fight choreos were practical. I mean, obviously you can tell which ones weren't, but there was a level of, let's make this realistic. Let's try to be, you know, not a giant CGI mess. And yeah make it enjoyable. So, and as someone has said earlier, the action was pretty good in this film.
It was.
Yeah.
I honestly like the suit a lot.
Let's talk about the suit. We're here. Sorry, Jenny. We'll come back to Jenny. He gets the scarab. He's Blue Beetle. Yay. That was a fun sequence, him transforming and his family freaking out. That was a lot of fun as well.
Right. And I like, it's something small, but I like how the family, or at least George Lopez's character, they're not just like idly sitting by, not just screaming and watching their family. George tries to rip this thing off of his face. Like once it gets on his face, there's a family member that actually tries. Cause you know, sometimes you see these in superhero movies and like the family's like the audience and they're like, whoa, that's our son getting mutilated into a monstrosity. But I could tell there was love there. They thought, one of them thought,
yo, let me get this stuff out.
Let me help my nephew, for God's sake. He is screaming.
I think he says at one point, like, in Spanish, like, let me get this beach off of you. That's it. And it's so fucking
funny. It was so funny. I liked it.
They were saying like, oh my gosh, he's possessed. He's got a
demon. Yeah. Possessed. Oh my God, when the black stuff started like coming like onto like his mouth and face, he looked a little demonic.
That's a scary scene, right? I don't know what I would do in that moment. But yeah, very well done sequence. Carol G, gotta shout her out, was the voice of the Scarab. Becky G. Wrong G.
Becky G. Wow. I was gonna be like, wow. Like, that does
you did
not
this
sound
you
like
did
Carol
this already
at
the theater and you did it again.
How many artists have the singular letter G as
not
their...
all of them are the same.
I'm
they're
sorry.
All the same to you. They're
I apologize.
Becky G.
This all right. Shout out to Becky G.
This is the Yellow Power Ranger.
Sure. The Yellow Power Ranger as Kaji Da, the Scarab. This is a big thing as far as the Blue Beetle mythos is concerned, is that the Scarab and Jaime are usually at odds, as far as the Scarab typically wants more control. Jaime is like, no, that's not how we do things. How did y'all feel about the interaction between Jaime and the Scarab? Was that something you cared for? Did you notice? Did you like it?
I feel like they could have done a little more.
They're going to do more.
Like you said, there are some moments where they have interactions where, you know, the Scarab is about to kill someone. And Jaime's like, no, we don't kill. So then instead of a sword against a human, it's now like those sonic wave emitter things. Yeah. But I wanted more like back and forth. And I think we brought this comparison up before, kind of like in Venom, despite the atrocities of that movie, I think they did a pretty good job of the dynamic between Venom and Eddie Brock, where Eddie Brock does not want any of this, but Venom does want all of it. And you know, that movie has other problems, but I think that's one of the things that they did right in Venom. For this one, I mean, maybe they're saving something like that for a sequel, because you already have like the whole thing with the family and the family dynamic and trying to establish that. And maybe there just wasn't enough time to fit in another dynamic with the Scarab and Jaime. But at the very least, I want this in a sequel. I acknowledge that it's not really here in this movie, but I need it in a sequel to this one. Because I feel like you said, that is a major element to the Blue Beetle character, at least the versions that I've seen, where it's the Scarab at odds with Jaime, you know, because one wants to kill, one doesn't want to. So definitely want that for a sequel, because I did not get it here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this relationship with Kaji Da and Jaime was a little bit more than a Jarvis and Karen sort of AI, you know, like in your ear type of situation, and a little less than the symbiote with like Eddie Brock and Venom. It was like that in between zone, because through most of it, I was thinking of it as more like a suit, in the sense of like, this is an AI suit, not necessarily like an entity that like is supposed to be merging with him. And I know that they put a lot of references that like, oh, his brainwaves are syncing with like the suit brainwaves. But even in that flashback, it's when he was in his mind.
His cathartic moment.
That suit was just floating there, and it didn't have like a persona to it. It was kind of just a thing. And it was literally like frozen. So like, I didn't really get the sense that there was supposed to be stronger than an AI component to it. I thought it was just a suit, if that made any sense.
No, that makes sense. I think that scene kind of shows off that too. I didn't get a vibe that it was like another creature trying to merge with him.
And me not knowing too much of the Blue Beetle backstory, I think it was, until we said it right now, I didn't realize that it was like a totally different persona that's like inside of him.
Mm-hmm. The Scarab is alive.
Yep.
Barely in this movie though. But the suit, I think one of the highlights of this film is the suit and the action with the suit. I think they nailed it. Yeah. I think it looks really good. I don't know. Yeah, I really liked it. It was cool.
I loved the suit.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. I got my clippers. Pin people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the clippers. Those were cool.
And I liked the, we talked about this a little earlier, of just like the creativity of like the different weapons that were created and the comment like near the end of like whatever you can think up, you know, we can create. So yeah, I thought it was like, I think some recent complaints from a lot of us have been just like the use of CGI, and it's not necessarily that CGI is a problem. It's just that like, if we are overworking, the animators and the creators, and they don't have enough time to really fully realize like a good end product, then we get kind of a messy muddled, you know, CGI in a lot of these movies. So you could tell that a lot more care was put into making sure some of these action sequences actually were pulled off and were more creative. So I really like the suit as well.
And they were well shot too. Like I never got lost in the action. I was like, you know, I felt you could follow the action, you could follow the choreo. There was a lot of some long-standing shots where they just kind of let him do his thing. I mean, the kid was on Cobra Kai. He knows how to fight. They trained him. Like, I saw some little Cobra Kai kicks. I was like, ooh, okay. Look at Blue Beetle. Look at Sholo. I like that. It was fun. It was fun. It was good. The flight sequences I thought were fun too. Probably would like some more in the future. But yeah, I think overall, this suit is probably one of the best comic book suits I've seen in recent years. I dare you to name one better. This was
like the only comic book suit that I think is like at this level or maybe a little bit better is Deadpool.
Very similar too with the eyes. They have similar eyes.
Yeah.
Right. And then the scene where he's cutting the bus in half and he's like, oh no.
Yeah. Like I know that was in the trailer.
Oh.
But like, but that scene was still, it was like, oh shit.
Well, he's emoting. Yeah. You can see the emoting.
I was going to say the expression, being able to express through the mask, I think is a good element to have. For a character like this, who like when they're in their superhero mode, their face is covered. So you got to show like when they're fearful, when they're scared, when they're doing something silly, like with the bus. I agree that this is probably one of the better superhero suits.
I also appreciate a lot is that a lot of the scenes were filmed with him in the suit without the mask.
Good amount.
There was a lot of him like trying to like power up or like trying to like, you know, talk to people, and them taking off the mask for that, like I felt was very appropriate versus him just being in the mask the whole time. The only other superhero I can think of that does that is Spider-Man, where he'll take off the mask when he's having interactions with people and then putting it back on. But this was good. The suit was great. I also noticed that when he has interactions with his family members and he's like hugging them, like you can see like the suit is like moving and like it doesn't feel weird. It doesn't like look like it's like a cosplay type of suit. And I mean, like I thought it was done really well. You'll also notice that like in superhero movies that have like super CGI type suits, they're not really interacting with other people like while they have the suit on. And interacting, I mean like physically touching other people. And then this one, he's hugging his family members. They're all crying together. Like it's all really while he's in the suit, which is cool.
Yeah, no, I think they did a really good job. Like you're saying, yeah, it felt lifelike. They gave life to it outside of just making it an actual suit versus say a Green Lantern suit. Let's talk about real quick. I would dare say this scene was probably really, there was a deeper commentary here. The scene where they attacked the house. I was looking at Dr. Jason. I was like, this is giving ice. Big time. Like at first when it was playing out, I was just like, damn, they gotta hide. And then like when they came in and they started pulling them apart and they found them in like the one room, I was like, wow, I see you. This was really good. I think it was really well done.
Yeah, and I think to add on to that element, the fact that the father of the house, you know, like the patriarch
yeah.
of the house was there kind of like over them, like trying to protect them.
Sheltering them, you know, trying to...
And they were all hidden in one room, like in the corner. And I feel like that whole scene was very emotional to me because like they're going in, this is the house that they are trying everything they can to like not lose, right? Because that's what you get in the beginning of the movie. And then on top of it, these military people come in and with zero like regard to like anything in the house, they're throwing things, they're knocking things over, they're taking some crap out, they're looking for a human, and yet they're going in the drawers and throwing things at, like, it's like they don't have any concept of like, this is where somebody resides and where somebody lives. We're just being, excuse my language, assholes, and just like destroying these people's house. And it was kind of not hard to watch, but it was very emotional to watch, especially when they put them all on their knees, like in the front of the house, and they have the helicopter light on them. Like it was
said, light them up.
It's like treating them like you have no rights. You're below human. We don't care what happens to you. We're like, you know, you're worthless to us.
Mind you, this is not the military. This is not the government. This is not the police.
Private,
yeah, this is some private. Police. Yeah, corporation. Some
private corporation.
Like, yeah. I feel some films.
But there were some elements there that were trying to nod a light into what's happening.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. But I'm just saying, as far as. They don't have the right to do this, you know, like they don't. And then I feel other films try to throw on this like really emotional, relatable, realistic scenes, and they don't nail them. I can't think of them off the top of my head right now, but they are out there. And I feel they actually did really well with this scene. I thought this was probably one of the better sequences in the film.
Yeah, and I would say too that even some of the dialogue during that scene of like, to people's points of like dehumanizing the family is for the Cord character, I forgot her first name, Victoria. Where her comment was like, we're going after the family because we want the Scarab, but we know if we go after the family, he's going to come. But also her wanting to see the power of the suit. So like, yeah, aim your guns towards the family because he's like obviously going to. So all of it is like, you know, they're a means to an end. They're not actually people that we,
yeah.
That we,
the
we
dehumanization is like very apparent in that scene. And like, again, it kind of echoes like the dehumanization, like with ICE and all that to all these immigrant families. Like they really portrayed it in a very, like pretty, I would say like they very visceral, very, right there on the spot, without saying this is ICE, they said like this is ICE.
And there was dialogue too of like when Jaime first, like the Scarab first like connected, they were like, we really can't call anyone because grandma and the father are undocumented.
Yes, I noticed that. It's like brings up another very important aspect that happens here in the States. And this is like, actually, like, not only for, like, calling, like, the cops or, the like, law enforcement when it comes to this, even, like, with health care in general, that they're afraid of going to a doctor because they're going to start seeing, oh, yeah, you're undocumented. And they think that they're going to deport them. And it's, like, it really just like, that little scene there, what they're saying, it's, like, it highlights the fears of a lot of people in the Hispanic community.
Yeah.
When it comes to, like, just... asking for help, it's like, sure, you're gonna help me out and then I'm gonna be deported.
That's also like
that's what they think a lot of times.
That's also the root of George Lopez's character too, is like Big Brother's always watching.
Yep.
It could be to like get us out. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Like he's kind of right in the movie. It's like everything he says, it's like, yeah, it's kind of right.
I was ready for Jaime to say, fuck the no killing rule. They're aiming at your family. I would have been like, that's all right. But
I was very surprised at that too, at that point. Because the Scarab offered to like, right? Like when he was deflecting the bullets, the Scarab said, all right, let's do this. And Tommy's like, no killing. And I guess, you know, it's just a testament to his character. It's like, no, we're better than them.
We can't get to their level. When they go low, you go high.
And I think that's like that's what they were trying to mark as the difference between an anti-hero and a hero, is that like, even though it would be easier to kill these people, the hero element is to look for a loophole to that and try to nullify these people instead of killing them.
I would not have been mad.
Interesting.
I'm saying I wouldn't have been mad.
We'll take a deeper dive into that later.
I'm not saying I would have done the same thing. I'm just saying I wouldn't have been mad. So
wow.
And I think also the element of half of the family being separated and the other half leaving, and the ones that were separated not knowing what to do, like that hit home a bit for me. And it's just like that fear, you know, the fear of like separate, like the mom and the grandma, like what could they have done in that situation? And they're seeing two of their loved ones being detained. Like, it's hard to watch. And then even harder to watch with like everything that was happening with the father and the way that all of those actors were emoting, like the things that were happening off camera. Like, it was crazy. It was done so well. Probably the third time that I cried at that movie.
That was heavy. The sister, I keep forgetting the sister's name. She ate that scene.
Oh wow. Yeah.
That was heavy. I'm like, wow, this feels kind of real.
Yeah. And then, you know, I was like, damn, that's really tropey as well. But it felt earned, that scene, that the father's heart attack would come back in that moment, because that I can't imagine
given the circumstances.
Right I was like, damn, they foreshadowed this, you know. If he was already stressed about,
like, they really, that scene, the thing again, it's like so vivid, and it's so like you feel that you're in the scene. It's not that I've seen this a lot of times in other movies and all that. It's like, it's so emotional that it feels like it's actually happening right in front of you.
And again, it's just there is a aspect of reality that, you know, they really portrayed it to a T, to where this is the reality for some people, you know. And I think it didn't feel forced, which is good. No, some movies, it'll feel forced. This did not feel forced. Nope. And I really, too, like the grandma's resolve at the end of all that, where she's like, there will be a time for tears. It's not now. You know, I was like, okay.
I love the grandma. I honestly adored the grandma.
And that was really good, too. Like, the fact that the grandma, because we established that earlier on, too, like the grandma being the matriarch of the family, like in a household like that. I liked how she stepped up now that, you know, the father's gone.
Yeah.
And there needs to be like a core, or like a leader, a pillar of the family, a pillar. And she did a fantastic job. And I know some movies don't even do this, but I like how the family still has agency, even though Jaime has been taken from the corporation. Because usually at this point it's like, oh, well, now he has to somehow break free on his own and reunite with the family and rescue them. No, they're going to rescue him.
They're going to rescue him. Yep.
I love that. I love that.
I know, and like, honestly, the grandma is just like the matriarch, you know, like the matriarch position. That's like kind of like how it is in my household. Like, we're a ton, and like grandma's like there. But it, and also I found it hilarious. It's like, how do you know how to use a gun? She's like, oh, I have
not
like
just a gun. She grabs the Gatling gun.
She grabs the Gatling.
Right. It's like, down with the Imperials.
Sure.
That part was hilarious.
That took me out a little bit. I was like,
you hated that part.
I didn't hate it. I thought
it's
like,
so funny.
I said, this is silly. This is cartoony. But it was fine. Overall, it was fine. And she's getting a kick out of it, too.
Yeah, she's having a shit ton of fun. It's like the grandma's like, she's laughing the entire time while she shows.
And then after she's done, she's like, all right, time to go. Follow me.
Right.
I was like, okay.
You can hate it. I loved it.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. It just, you know, we had this very realistic scene like before, and then we got this.
No, but like sometimes, don't get me wrong. Sometimes it's like that in Hispanic households. Like my grandma, for example, like you meet her and you would never think that she's
Can your grandma tote a Gatling gun?
It's a switch.
No, but like you would never think that she's a survivor from the Spanish Civil War.
Why can't I think
she was in the Soviet Union when Hitler invaded.
I don't know, I couldn't think that about her.
But it's like it kind of gave me my grandma vibes. That's like they're very calm, very nice, and all that, but they've been through shit.
And they could have been leading the charge in some of these fronts.
I'm looking at my grandma right there on the big screen. She's just like that.
That's fine. I do think that scene was more played for laughs.
There is a little hint of truth.
There was a hint of truth to it. It was funny.
And that's part of good writing, right? Is that like you can take a character, you can take a really cheesy, funny scene. But then incorporate a little bit of cultural context.
I'll say this. What brings it back to the realm of reality is simply where there's a lot you don't know about your grandmother. The moment they said that, I was like, okay, yeah. If you don't talk to your grandparents and know their story, boom. So that part, I was like, okay, I liked that. That made it better. So go talk to your grandma.
Also, while we're talking about all of the family coming to save him, them being in the previous Blue Beetle's ship,
which we haven't talked about that part.
No regard to human life. They were
killing people.
I mean, she's right.
The impale, the when the leg impaled one of the soldiers, and it kept dragging.
I don't think they knew, but I don't think they knew either.
There was some dialogue that I think they were like, you stepped on him, and he did.
They acknowledge they took a life.
It's hard to get a beetle ship training these days, though.
It is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, shoot, Rudy, George Lopez, he got that thing started, you know. It's been 20-plus years since that thing seen the light of day. He was in there.
He kicked it.
It's right. But, I mean, he also got the computer up and running, which was good. What was Jenny good for? Unlocking doors?
We haven't even talked about Jenny yet.
Let's talk about Jenny and the cord.
Bruna Marquezine, aka Neymar's ex-girlfriend.
Wait, really?
Bruna Marquezine is Neymar's ex-girlfriend.
In real life.
In real life.
Okay.
I did not know that. Not the one that's accusing him of bad stuff, right?
No.
Neymar, the soccer player.
Neymar.
Neymar. Is he referencing the MCU?
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. Neymar. Love him. Yes. Okay. Ex-girlfriend of Neymar?
Ex-girlfriend of Neymar.
There's some bad history there too.
There's a lot of bad history.
Oh boy.
There is tea. Interesting.
Plays Jenny Cord. We should focus on her and not who she's dating. No, it's not. We literally talked about Barbie a couple of weeks ago. So it's important to recognize women on their own. Although I don't think this character was... I think there's some parts that I really liked about her and parts I wish we knew a little bit more of.
As a character in the movie, she wasn't amazing.
I can't. It's her acting. Let's just say it.
I didn't like her acting.
You don't like her acting? Wow.
I even like her emotional scenes, I just didn't feel them. I was just like, okay. Like, you're a very, like, you're a very pretty face, and I'm pretty, and you're very talented, I'm sure, but this movie was not it.
I pulled some emotion when she was talking about her father, the two times, the one on the couch and the one in, like, at the end when they were all circling up. I felt, you know, some emotion from her on that one. The believability of the character was a little weirdly written, just because it's like, you have daughter of a billionaire that's going around and like trying to, I guess, make amends from what the corporation has been doing, but doesn't even know what's happening in her own backyard. You know, like that these houses are getting taken over, that there's, you know.
It is the ignorance, the billionaires too up in their high tower to know what's going on with the little people trope.
It's like she's not evil. She really isn't. It's just
she's not evil. Yeah,
it's like she's ignorant. She's very naive as to the real world and all the problems that her company deserves. Well,
yeah, well, I don't know about that, because when he was scrolling through her Instagram, like he was reading and finding out that she like would go around and
do charitable work.
Charitable work on, you know, the company's accord to try to like soften the blow. So, and I get it, and it I think it's, there was a, I don't know if age played a factor to this, but like it didn't seem like, I feel like she should have been a little older, like her character should have been a little bit older.
Like she was like what, like 25, 26 in the movie. We realized she's like 28, but it's like you're way too young for at least this role, like in the movie, you know, of what the character they're trying to portray here. It's like, I don't know. I love her character, to be honest.
I didn't have a problem with her age. I will say,
right.
I thought it was cool that, you know, Ted Kord, so there's three Blue Beetles, which I'm glad they mentioned all three, Dan Gareth, Ted Kord, and obviously Jaime. He's white. I don't know. I imagine Ted Kord is white. But the fact that she's Brazilian, I was like, oh, cool. This is different. I probably would have just assumed she would have been a white character.
No, yeah. Like they, I think they did that little change because she is in real life Brazilian.
No. I mean, they said, fuck it. Let's cast whoever, which I'm totally fine with. Let's add more ethnicity, you know?
Yeah. I mean, with Susan Sarandon being her aunt, like that was choice, because I didn't really see any of the resemblance in family.
I think it was the father.
It was the father.
Yeah, the father.
Yeah, I didn't know that was her aunt until like the end of the movie.
What? They said that in the beginning.
They said that at the beginning.
But like, you know, because they look nothing alike whatsoever. But then by the end, and then even at the end, you know, she's pointing a gun at her in the helicopter. I'm like,
oh, well, she said in the beginning of the movie too, she sent her goons to go kill her, which I'm like, wow,
they tried to kill her. And I'm like, they can't be related. They can't be.
They're related, just family history. Who gets the family Bible? That's a conversation they'll need to have.
I wonder if that's also like a contrast to the Hispanic family and how close and tied they are versus the other side of spectrum, when they're like, no, just kill my niece. It's
What are we trying to say about Caucasian families right now?
I just said there was a contrast to the families.
Just a contrast. That's all there is.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, there were pieces of like, she didn't feel like some love interests where her only role is to be love interest, but it also didn't feel like they fully kind of realized some of her potential. I think we got to hear some of what she was interested in based off of like her connection to her father. So like, we want to actually do good and we want to contribute like positively to the world rather than like build a bunch of weapons. But maybe if there is a future installment, we'll get to know more, especially considering, I guess we'll talk about, you know, post credits later on. But yeah, I think it feels like similar to what Darsh brought up in terms of like the relationship with Kaji was kind of like in the middle of like two possibilities. Jenny's character also felt like in the middle of like two possibilities of like, nothing at all or quite a lot. Like, we get like a little bit of kind of both in terms of like, here's some of her history, but also she doesn't have as much space in the movie.
Right. But I think this was her debut in, I think, like Hollywood. I'm like looking it up right now. Like,
I think so. Yeah.
Because like, she's been in a ton of like Brazilian movie, I think some Brazilian movies and like telenovelas. But this was, I think, her first movie like in Hollywood. So like, she made the jump. So I think like, she has talent. It's just, I don't think they gave her great lines, at least in this movie.
Interestingly enough, she placed second for being Supergirl in The Flash.
Really?
Wow, it would have been her.
Yeah, she was the runner-up.
Interesting.
Not that I think that would have made that movie.
It wouldn't. It's better. Nice to know.
Wait, that movie? Wait. Oh, she was Supergirl in The Flash. I thought you said Supergirl in the series, and I was like,
No. Supergirl in The Flash. Yeah, she was second. She's runner-up.
Okay. So, no, but
wow. You can't hopefully be Supergirl.
Hopefully we see more of her. I feel that I think the lines they gave her in this movie didn't do her justice.
You know, I think like the vibe that I was getting from this is a potential kind of like Ant-Man and the Wasp type of situation where she could potentially pick up some of...
Do not give her another Scarab.
Oh. Why?
Potentially pick up the gear that the father made.
And yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Okay.
What's wrong with that?
That would be fine. That's different. That's fine. That's legacy. That's cool. That's a different take. We'll have the next film will be called Blue Beetles. I had a bad idea today. There's my good idea.
I heard two bad
but
ideas.
It's slightly better, but we'll continue on.
I think like that was like the kind of vibe. And then if we also look back at the Ant-Man and the Wasp, what was her name?
Evangeline Lilly.
She didn't really have that big of a role in the first Ant-Man.
She had probably her biggest role in the first Ant-Man.
Oh, yeah. Like, she really hasn't.
Well, I guess Ant-Man and the Wasp, but like, I don't know. I got more from her, I feel, in the first Ant-Man than anything.
My point is mute. My bad.
No, you're fine. It's okay. That's a really good comparison as far as where she could end up.
You know what's interesting is that we've had what, 10 plus years, almost 20 plus years of movies of superheroes, and the way that we're finding all these correlations between all of them, like there's a lot, and it's hard to come up with new original ideas that are totally fresh, totally different within the superhero comic book realm. So we do have to highlight, and we have to like make sure that we give credit where credit is due. And I think this movie did a great job with adding that family element, adding a different take on a symbiote, adding a different take on a superpowered suit. I mean, they're all basically around the same element from what we've seen in other things, but I think this was a really good and fun take on other things.
Nothing is 100% original, but credit to James Gunn when he says it's not superhero movie fatigue. It's that if you're not investing in these characters or give them something worth investing in, whether it's emotionally or whatever, we're not going to care.
Yeah.
Point, like, plain and simple, we will not care. So, yeah, you know, this movie wraps up with a nice little bow. Community comes together. Yay. Which, again, very, very, still very real. Very real. That's a very real thing. The fact that the moment I saw they brought the food, I was like, that's real. And whatnot. I was like, Jenny, just let them stay in your mansion.
That's what I was thinking the whole
time. Yes. I was
thinking.
Not enough room. It's a mansion.
There's not. It's a mansion, but it's not home.
Shut
it's
up.
Not home.
For the time being, while they're rebuilding their home,
home is where the family is.
That's where the family is.
Exactly.
It has history.
It's like Mako's family staying with the king of the Earth Nation.
Are you referencing Legend of Korra?
I am referencing Legend of Korra.
Wow.
Wow. Okay.
Missed all my references today. Wow, I'm on a roll. I must have had coffee.
Yeah, we barely get Legend of Korra references. Ooh.
Also, I'm glad that it wasn't one of those scenes where it's like, oh, the whole community is going to get together to help rebuild your house.
I mean, that's real.
It is real, but I don't think that it would have been appropriate in that time where a very wealthy company just went and destroyed your house, and now the community has to use their resources to help rebuild your house. I think the company...
Oh, no, I think Jenny Core is going to do good by her company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the fact that even with that element, the community still got together to like say like, hey, here's some food, here's some company. We're always turning things into a party. Like that's like funerals, party, weddings, birthdays, party. Like doesn't matter if it's a good situation or a bad situation, party.
Oh, I wouldn't call this a party. I would call it a gathering.
If there's food involved, it's a party.
Sure. They brought food.
They brought food and there was probably
music. They brought food.
I want to say they're partying for the death of the father, but you know.
No.
Celebration of life.
There is celebration of life in Hispanic.
Exactly.
A better phrase, celebration of life.
Yeah. I really did like the father in this.
Oh, he's good. He's in a lot of stuff too.
Yeah, he looked familiar.
I think I first seen him in Prince Caspian.
Prince Caspian.
Yes.
The Narnia movie? Yeah,
the Narnia movie.
Wow.
I know him from that. I can't remember exact. I think he played like the henchman to the evil uncle who actually stabbed the evil uncle at the end. He's also in Narcos. For the Narcos fan.
Narcos, yes. He's so, one of the...
Damian Alcázar.
Yes, he's
yes,
one
he
of
was
the,
in Chronicles
the,
of Narnia.
The cartel ringleaders.
I don't watch Narcos. I don't know.
Oh, no. He was in... If it's Narcos, he was, I think, in maybe season two. He was definitely in season three. Definitely in season three of Narcos. Wow, I knew I saw him from somewhere. Okay, all right, that's awesome. He was great in Narcos.
He was good in this movie. His little Jaime, with great power comes great responsibility.
Don't you dare. That was
that is what that moment was.
Listen,
nothing is 100% original.
Okay, but was it done well?
Yeah, it was good.
No, you were saying something else.
I did not.
Out of that theater. But that's fine.
So that was, I think, my
cried again.
My other crying scene.
It was great. It was a great film. It was a great moment.
I loved when he's like saying, you know, like we don't have, like we're always searching for our purpose and all that. Like I still don't know what my purpose is. I'm still searching it for you. But I know. But and then like when they're like in that like the afterlife, he's like, now I know. And like my purpose was to be here in this moment. For you,
absolutely. The way that that rocked
that, me, like that was such it was, a touching scene,
and there was
that,
a
specific- because it built up because like it builds up and like from another scene and just there
exactly it was
there. It's like it was because we have this conversation at the beginning of the movie, and it's like my purpose is to be here for you in this exact moment because you need it. And it's like I was like.
He said a specific word too. He said, like, I am here to bridge you to your next, like, to your greatest potential in a way. I forgot what the line was.
Yeah, like it was a great line. It was like, such a great line. Perfect delivery, everything. That scene was great, honestly.
And it's always been, like, it hit me really emotionally because when you think of your parents' generations and your grandparents' generation and the fact that like they gave basically their entire life so that you can have this quote unquote American dream. And it's like, this is my purpose. My purpose isn't for me. It's for my future generation to live.
Yeah.
And it was very emotional. Like it's
like very selfless.
Yeah.
Very selfless. Very just like, I'm here for you to succeed. And it's like, but yeah, the entire, again, just highlighting the family dynamic in this film, it has heart.
But oh, Grandmaster yeah. looks at it as, with great power comes great responsibility. Nah,
nothing is 100% original. It's fine. That was his moment. That was literally Jaime's.
No, but I did not sense the with great power comes great responsibility.
You have to sense it. It's his rise to the challenge. That was what he needed for him to be like, I'm going to accept me being the Blue Beetle. Call a spade, it's okay, folks. But I'm not saying that scene wasn't great. It is just the equivalent. It's okay.
Was the
okay.
scene great or not?
Hmm?
Was the scene good? Did you like the scene?
I mean, as Darce pointed out earlier, him reaching out to the Scarab, despite the fact we didn't really have much identity with the Scarab, so it didn't really work in all aspects of it. But the conversation with the father was probably the best part of it.
So you liked it?
I didn't say I didn't like it.
You know, it also kind of reminded me a little bit of... Moon Knight, but then also a little bit of Black Panther, where like he's in the ancestral realm. And,
yeah,
like,
I would say more Black Panther.
You are wrong.
All of you are wrong. Thank you. Another moment where the hero realizes and has to rise to the challenge.
Last I checked, you didn't take Black Panther scene when that came out and said, this is very, of course, with great power comes great responsibility. MCU,
okay, but if we take a step back, we can realize.
Did you like this scene or not?
Original.
Did you like this scene? Did you like this scene or
not? Yes, I liked the scene. Was it perfect? No.
That's all we needed if you liked it. That's all we needed.
That's fine. The film has heart. Heart is good. Heart's not a bad thing. Okay? They nailed the heart. Jaime flies off into the air with Jenny after getting blood rushing to his mid region. Very funny.
The suit part was funny.
That was funny. That's the interaction I wanted more from this film. Ted Kord, he's alive. Ooh.
Yay.
Squeakquel incoming.
I don't know what his revelation of him being alive does for a sequel.
He's uncovered something, and that's why he was missing this whole time. A greater threat than I forgot her name. I called
Victoria
her
Victoria Kord.
Hillary.
Wait. Yes. It could also be because I know they're like other Scarabs, right?
Yes, there are. The Reach is the
color coded.
The Reach is the alien race that created the Scarabs. They could very much bring the Reach in if they like in a sequel. This film, again, is in a very interesting place as far as it is technically still part of the DCEU. It's listed under the DCEU as the 14th film. Yes, this is not official DCU. Don't get it twisted. All right.
Wait, what?
This film is not official James Gunn DCU. However, the character of Jaime and this story can be retained for the DCU. It can be.
There's a reason why James Gunn gave the green light to continue with this movie.
I mean, James Gunn gave the green light to Flash.
James Gunn did not give the green light for Flash to appear in his DCU.
No, we don't know that yet.
He hasn't said it for Flash, but he has said it for Blue Beetle.
Exactly.
Film that came out way later.
Good.
So
good.
I think
I'm just
it's
saying,
very,
just because James Gunn gives a green light doesn't mean, you know.
Get your facts straight.
I got my facts. Green light does not mean good. Green light does not always mean good. I hope to see him again. I hope to see Sholo again.
But we must worship our god, Kevin Feige.
Do not call for that. No.
He's just been screwing everything up for the last 3 years.
Yes, like, blame everything on Kevin.
Shielding. Don't blame everything on Kevin.
Kevin's
fault. Leave him alone.
That we would like to discuss as we start to wrap up.
I have a question for the table. Yes. Okay. As a third party non-Hispanic member of the Yonko table, the debate is Jaime Reyes, the Blue Beetle, Well, I, you know, let me just ask this, because I think it's unfair to just go ahead and line it up with another prominent superhero for another particular group of people. What is Jaime Reyes and Blue Beetle to you? As far as this film, as far as representation, what is this film and what is this character to you? It doesn't have to be anything. I just know there is a conversation going around what this film means to people.
I think it's a very, like, a very important film, like, for Hispanics, because, again, it's the first Hispanic superhero that's, like, protagonist on the live action screen. And hopefully, like, the first of many. And again, it's just like, we're there. We're on the big screen. Like, we have our, like, we have a hero, as I would, like, as we could say. So I think that's, like, very important. And I'm glad that this movie was really good, because it, like, I would have been very sad being like, oh, the first Hispanic superhero movie was a dud, and it wasn't, thank God. So yeah, for me, it's very, very important. Hopefully it spurs many more.
Our Black Panther?
No.
No?
Well, here's why I say that. Because I agree, I think it is, it's nice to see just, like, positive, fun representation. I think when you put Black Panther in the context of, like, when it came out, how people went to the theater, how it was an event, what it meant not only for, like, building on the MCU, but, like, specifically for the Black and African community, this, it doesn't equate.
Right.
And I don't think, also, I don't think it's fair to try to compare them. Just, like, it's the same. I feel the same in terms of, like, Spider-Verse 2. Like, they're doing different things. And so I think it's okay to just have it on its own and say, we have Latinx representation that is, like, positive, that is fun, that does involve elements that feel really familiar, but I don't think we should be comparing it to something that feels completely different and that had a completely different impact. So as far as, like, what it means to me, I think it was, like, just a good time. And it was nice to see things that felt familiar, but I wouldn't say that, like, you know, I felt the same as I did with some other films that I watched and saw myself in, because I don't think that was the point of this film. I think Black Panther was trying to do something completely different. I think Spider-Verse is trying to do something different. And I think it's okay to have all of those things exist differently at the same time.
Yeah, no, I'm with Dr. Mondo on this one too. I definitely like the family element and how they showcased it throughout the film. And I feel like that representation matters in the context of showing a live action superhero from the Hispanic community at the forefront, and actually it being a good movie. I think I would have been really PO'd if this movie was really bad. So I'm like, oh, well, great. There goes the first debut. It was fun. It was fun. It wasn't anything profound. It wasn't like anything. I don't see this being nominated at the Oscars in any capacity. But it was fun. I liked it. It was a great time.
Yeah, and to echo off that note, it was just a fun movie to go into the theaters and watch. I laughed. I cried. I was drawn in the whole time. Was this supposed to be something that was world building and earth shattering and, like, giving us everything that we needed and more? No, and I don't think that was the intention. Was that the intention for Black Panther? Yes. Did it rise to that occasion? Absolutely, yes. Oh, I think
Grandmaster's shaking his head. Oh!
But I do think that Blue Beetle did a great job with its first Latinx led movie, and you get the family dynamic within an outlet that is going to be watched by a lot of people, and I thought it was great. I do prefer, and I didn't get to see this movie because it was never released, but I'm glad that Blue Beetle had a better review than if they were to release Batgirl just to release Batgirl. From what we hear in the production studios of it not doing too well, I'm glad that this was the first Latinx-led film that we got to see in a superhero world, since it had such positive reviews.
I think, well, one, I'm glad this film made it to the theaters, because with the Batgirl, both of them were slated to be HBO Max releases at first. So I'm glad this film actually made it to the theaters. I'm always for representation as far as communities feeling seen, heard, you know, someone they can identify with. I'm always that. I feel Black Panther did that. Shang-Chi did that. And now you could throw Blue Beetle in the mix. You can even throw in, you know, Wonder Woman did that for women. Captain Marvel, you know, pick and choose whatever you like. But, you know, as we continue down the superhero films in these more intricate universes, I'm team bring on the diversity, bring on the representation. But I, you know, I don't think any film truly ever strives, this is why I was shaking my head, I don't think any film truly strives to be earth shattering or groundbreaking. I think at the core of all these films where we see, you know, just a really good film that does really well as far as, you know, this representation goes and whatnot, I think at the heart, the people just want to make a film that they genuinely will love and genuinely can put their heart into. And that is what you get with films like Black Panther, Blue Beetle, you know, Shang-Chi. I don't think it's a matter of we're here to break records and we're here to be a cultural phenomenon. I think what it really comes down to is that if they take pride in their craft and people see that pride, the people will show out. And I think that's what's happening here with a lot of these films. Unfortunately, you know, Blue Beetle, DC is still a mess, and the marketing for this film was not there. So, you know, I worry about it as far as its, you know, box office run. But I think if people do come out to this movie, they will have an enjoyable time. I don't think it's a perfect film, but I think it is, as y'all said, a lot of fun. And as we talked about, they nail a lot of, you know, the things that we said were good. And there's hope for Jaime Reyes in the future. And there's hope for other entities of, you know, what it means to be represented on superhero screens in the future. Do we need to give final scores, or everybody's sentiments should be a score enough?
I was an 8.
Yeah, like 8.5 for me.
4.5.
Out of five. Out of five.
Oh.
God, come on. Put two and two. Okay. Put it together.
That's my fault. I give it about like an 8.7, about a 9.
Yeah, I do out of five, like 3.5 out of five.
I was a 7 originally. This conversation has boosted me to a 7.8.
Yay. We love
that's good. It's good. Okay. Blue Beetle, everybody. That is it from us here at the Yonko table talking about Blue Beetle. Go watch this movie if you haven't already. But hey, I mean, we tackled basically the whole plot, not in linear order, but there's a lot of fun to be had with this film. So go see it while you can. Folks at DC and Warner Brothers, please pay your actors and your writers. Enough of this. I'd hate to hear how these folks were not paid for this, nor the streams that it gets, because I'm sure it's going to thrive when it's released for streaming. Pay your people. Goodness gracious. Tired of saying this. But goodness, we'll hope to see Blue Beetle again and James Gunn's DCU, the Gunverse. Hope to see more representation down the line. And give us characters we can invest in, and we will show out every time, DC or Marvel. Okay. That's it from us at the Yonko table. Thank you for listening on your various podcast stations, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you for following us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Twitch, And of course, if you ever want to continue the discourse you heard on this pod, please join our Discord with the link below, and we'll gladly combat you and duke it out with you, whether or not you like this movie or not. We will. We're always ready to fight. And then, thanks for listening. How shall we close this out? We didn't talk about the music. The music in the film was really good.
Atrévete, salte del closet, destápate, quítate el esmalte.
I know that one.